It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You all right?
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
U.S. defense officials are telling Fox News that the alleged bomber, Salman Abedi, spent 3 weeks in Libya before returning to England just days before the attack. And the Associated Press is now releasing a photo of Abedi walking in a nearby Manchester shopping center last Friday, carrying a bag with a tag still on it, believed to have held the bomb on Monday night. And there was another raid tonight on a home just outside of Manchester where police took a woman into custody, believed to be connected to Abedi's terror cell.
Whoa.
Heavily armed British officers raided an apartment building in central Manchester Wednesday afternoon. At one point, using a controlled explosion, part of the intense investigation into a possible terror network that supported suicide bomber Salman Abedi. Abedi's older brother was arrested in Manchester, and his younger brother has now been busted in Tripoli, Libya, because of suspected ties to ISIS. Libyan authorities say the bomber's father also arrested for interrogation purposes. Several other suspects have been taken into custody by police who say Abedi did not act alone.
I think it's very clear that this is a network that we are investigating. And as I've said, it continues at a pace. There's extensive investigations going on and activity taking place across Greater Manchester as we speak.
Authorities say it appears Abedi spent at least 3 weeks in Libya before traveling to London, where he spent a couple of days before taking a train to Manchester Monday and detonating a sophisticated improvised explosive device in a foyer of the Manchester Arena as thousands of fans were leaving an Ariana Grande concert.
All right, that was Rick Leventhal on Special Report last night on Fox. Sandy Rios with you. So now we know that the bomber, the suicide bomber, was from Libya, and that's significant to us. Rick explained, you know, that his brothers had been arrested. His dad was a fighter in Libya who helped bring down Muammar Gaddafi. During the so-called Arab Spring, which means they are Islamists. That's who brought down Gaddafi. That's who the President of the United States at the time, Barack Obama, expedited and installed. And they did the same thing in Egypt. The Muslim Brotherhood took power. It's just amazing. And, of course, in Iran, the people who really wanted freedom were not supported by the Obama administration. I have to say that. But the thing that's relevant to this for Americans is that Libya is one of the countries on the president's two executive orders that we were supposed to do extra vetting or ban refugees from these war-torn countries. And remember, this is on hold. The judges, you know, they stopped it, the judges out in the Northwest, because they just can't, you know, we can't stop anyone from coming into this country. But just keep in mind, Libya, that is still a hotbed of terrorism, there's no ban on them coming to this country. And England should know all about that because the father and the mother and the brothers traveled back and forth between Libya. They had a history, but England didn't stop them either. So we see what happens when countries are careless about who comes into their country. And so along with that, I just read from Fox. This is an article by our friend Hans von Spakovsky that sanctuary cities are going to lose access to federal grants. That happened Monday. Some of these things are happening, and you're not hearing about them because there's just so much going on. But on Monday, Attorney General Jeff Sessions issued a memorandum to all the grant-making components within the Justice Department, cutting off any grants to sanctuary jurisdictions. You can imagine they'll be howling about that. That's just the first sentence of the piece. But we are now finding out, and I actually mentioned this in passing, but I say so many things, I don't expect you to remember, that the Obama administration was so careless in who they allowed into the country, and now it's been confirmed. This story just came out today from the Washington Times. Members, the Department of Homeland Security knowingly allowed MS-13 gang members to become into this country. I'll read this. Senator Ron Johnson, chairman of the Senate Homeland Security Committee, said a whistleblower turned over Customs and Border Protection documents from 2014 detailing the 16 people who were caught crossing the border. CBP apprehended them, knew that they were MS-13 gang members, and they processed and dispersed them into our communities. That, under the watch of President Barack Obama and Jay Johnson's Department of Homeland Security. And they are up in arms about Sheriff David Clark not putting quotation marks around some of his citations in his paper. They're trying to get him out of his appointment to Department of Homeland Security based on that silly inference. And by the way, we know now that the person who supposedly discovered this isn't even a college graduate, and he has a history of trying to nitpick and find problems like this. They're trying to destroy Sheriff Clark over that, over lack of quotation marks. When he cites, he should put quotation marks. We all should. But as I'd say, it's a grammar error because he gave attribution in his paper to every source that he used. So it's really, okay, so but now we know that the Department of Homeland Security under Jay Johnson and Barack Obama allowed 16 MS-13 members to be assimilated into the culture. And so now the other headline from the Washington Post is that Trump wants to deport MS-13 gang members, and El Salvador is dreading their return. Well, thank God for Donald Trump. Can we thank God for Donald Trump? We also know something else about the Obama administration. This was really a headliner. James Rosen delivered the information just last night. Let's listen.
On the day President Obama visited Los Angeles last October to yuck it up with Jimmy Kimmel, lawyers for the National Security Agency were quietly informing the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court that NSA had systematically violated the rights of countless Americans, a subject covered ironically on Kimmel's program.
People expect the government to monitor this enough to protect them from bad guys. But they worry that if government is in there too much, then that who's going to protect them from government.
Declassified documents first obtained by the news outlet Circa show the FISA court sharply rebuked the administration. With greater frequency than previously disclosed to the court, NSA analysts had used U.S. person identifiers to query the results of internet upstream collection, even though NSA's Section 702 minimization procedures prohibited such queries. Minimization refers to the precautions the government is supposed to take to ensure its infringements on Americans' rights are kept to a minimum. The judges blasted NSA's institutional lack of candor and added this is a very serious Fourth Amendment issue.
And tonight, for the first time, we can say confidently that there's been a finding that some of that espionage, that spying on Americans, actually violated the law.
All right, that's the first part of James's report. And, okay, this is what this means. It means that Barack Obama, as president, abused his authority. He used the powers of his office, the incredible powers of American spy agencies to spy on Americans, and he did not follow the law in protecting their names. There were careful guidelines, boundaries put in place so to protect American citizens. Don't ask me to explain that except in the very elementary level. It's just that there were abuses, and the FISA court, as you just heard, that's that secret court in Washington, D.C. that no one knows much about, had rebuked them, but we never heard about that. Never, because who's going to hold them to account? Who is going to hold them to account? An abuse of authority like this. James goes on. I want you to hear the rest of his report since it's so important. Let's listen.
The documents show it was back in 2011 that the FISA court first determined NSA's procedures to be, quote, statutorily and constitutionally deficient with respect to their protection of U.S. person information. 5 years later, 2 weeks before Election Day, the judges learned that NSA had never adequately enacted the changes it had promised to make. The NSA Inspector General and its Office of Compliance for Operations have been conducting other reviews covering different time periods, the judges noted, with preliminary results suggesting that the problem was widespread during all periods of review.
There's a linear connection between excessive acquisition of data by the intelligence community, distribution of that raw data to people who do not need to know it, availability of unmasking that is producing the real true names of the human beings whose emails, texts, and phone calls were the subject of all this, and then ultimately the selective revelation of those names.
Senator Rand Paul called this an amazing abuse of power. A spokesman for former President Obama did not return our request for comment. These disclosures are timely, though, as Section 702 of the FISA Amendments Act, one of the primary means by which U.S. citizens are caught up in incidental surveillance, is up for reauthorization, Brett, by the Congress at year's end.
Well, and the other implication is that, of course, that was James Rosen on Fox. The other implication is that when President Trump talked about his people in the White House, he talked about himself being surveilled en masse. This is what he's talking about. And more proof is coming out. It's like but there's so much happening, it's difficult to connect the dots. There was an abuse of power. They talk about President Trump abusing his power. This is now proof positive of abuse of power by the national intelligence agencies under the direction of Barack Obama. I want to tell you something light for a second, because there's so many things that I want to make sure that I tell you today. But I found this article, this information, just refreshing. We've speculated. You know that President Trump went to the Vatican with Melania and Ivanka and her husband. And you saw the photos, and we talked about it just a little bit yesterday. We know that they met with the Pope and that they had interesting exchanges about food. And also President Trump said, I'll never forget what you told me. We don't know what that means, but that's really not what I want to communicate. This is from the Daily Mail. And it says in this article that Melania, for the first time, is confirming that she's Catholic. She went to the Catholic hospital, the Vatican-affiliated pediatric hospital. She met with a boy who needed a heart. Just very sweet. You've seen pictures of that probably. And not long after they met together, he was granted a heart. And so she was very grateful about that. The bullet points on this Daily Mail, remember, Daily Mail is certainly not a Christian outlet. Interesting things. Her father was a member of the Communist Party in Slovenia in order to work, and the party was officially atheist. Melania, as we all remember, opened a February presidential rally in Florida by surprising the president with a recitation of the Lord's Prayer. I remember that. It was very, very moving. Well, now it talks about how she spent time in prayer at the Vatican-affiliated Bambino Gesù Hospital. She spent time in prayer at another location. She prayed in the hospital chapel. She read to this young Greek boy. He was the one who needed the heart, holding his hand. But this is what I think gets interesting. This is, again, from the Daily Mail. But the Trumps have been in a reflective religious mood since arriving in Saudi Arabia last Saturday. The frame of mind persisted throughout their time in Israel. Donald Trump himself, when he was visiting the Western Wall, it says, he marveled at the monument to God's presence and man's perseverance, he said Tuesday in a speech at the Israel Museum. I was humbled to place my hand upon the wall and to pray in that holy space for wisdom from God. This city, like no other place in the world, reveals the longing of the human heart to know and worship God. I just let that soak in, because many of us have speculated that this is not the same Donald Trump. He certainly was proud. That's one of the things that I was most concerned about him, was his arrogance and his pride, because I think pride destroys men. When did you ever hear him in the course of the election saying he was humbled and he was asking God for wisdom? I mean, I think that's pretty amazing. And then he also issued a proclamation on Wednesday calling for a national day of prayer for permanent peace. He called for that on May 29th over the Memorial Day holiday. On this ceremonious day, we remember the fallen, we pray for a lasting peace among nations, and we honor these guardians of our inalienable rights. I designate the hour beginning in each locality at 11 a.m. of that day as a time when people might unite in prayer. I urge the press, radio, television, and all other information media to cooperate in this observance. But I just think it's so noteworthy to read this sentence. The Trumps have been in a reflective religious mood since arriving in Saudi Arabia last Saturday. That frame of mind persisted throughout their time in Israel. I do think God is at work. I don't know what that doesn't mean we're going to have a happy ending. That's not what I'm saying. But I do believe that God is at work in this country, in its leaders. He's at work in many, many ways among his people, who are kind of, their understanding is quickening, I think. And they're seeing spiritual things in a more defined and colorful way. Colorful meaning the designations, the bright hues, the dark hues. We'll be right back. I have so much more to tell you. Please don't go away. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
This is a Decency Minute. I'm Bill Johnson. Be careful, little eyes, what you see, goes the old and oft-sung song of long ago, but still sung in places yet, and should be. Be careful, little eyes, what you see. Be careful, little eyes, what you see, for the Father up above is looking down in love. So be careful, little eyes, what you see. Bad images, yes, pornography does impact and does destroy. Of that, there is no doubt. I'm impressed with a newer book that gently helps parents inform their children that sadly there are pictures out there on signs, magazines, screens, TV that are bad and should be avoided as poison to the heart. Two, the book uses no bad images to make its important point. The book recommended for ages 3 to 6 is entitled Good Pictures, Bad Pictures, Junior Edition. To find out more, call 231-924-4050. 231-924-4050. This is a Decency Minute. I'm Bill Johnson.
Early feminism was biblical feminism based on a scriptural understanding of women, totally unrelated to today's radical pagan feminism. This is Jim Garlow. You could say Jesus was the first feminist, if that means Jesus was always for the outcast, the forsaken, the mistreated, and the hopeless. It was Jesus, after all, not the pagan world that surrounded him, who began to turn the tide in the way women are to be treated. By treating women as equals, Jesus also criticized the evil of male chauvinism. And the same must be said of the apostles who followed him. But there's one more thing I want to underscore. Jesus also knew that God the Creator, as the crowning of his work, created males and females to be different. This is the beautiful balance that the Bible seeks to maintain, which Jesus maintained. Males and females, gloriously different, but unquestionably equal. There's more at jimgarlow.com.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with this Fox News and commentary next.
Truett McConnell University.
Hey, my name is Aaron Abbs. I am an undecided major, and I'm a freshman here at TME. And as soon as I came here, I fell in love with the campus. Like, I knew, like, God was calling me to be here at TME. And, you know, I couldn't get a better education than this. Like, professors who pray before class, who care about your spiritual walk with Christ. You are who you are, and they care about you.
Are you called? Visit truett.edu today.
It's been a tradition at Northeast State Community College to offer a prayer at commencement. It's the way they do things in that part of Tennessee, but no more. A group of overly sensitive students had been offended by what they call overtly Christian prayers delivered at previous graduations. They demanded the college cease and desist, thanking the good Lord before, during, or after this year's ceremony. So the administration capitulated to a bunch of anti-Christian bullies, all for the sake of inclusivity. I'd be willing to bet a jug of sweet tea that most of the students attending Northeast State appreciate the prayers, but their opinion doesn't count. One of the supporters of the ban said a moment of silence covers all the bases, said it would give students a chance to contemplate. Maybe the perpetually offended graduates could contemplate the magnitude of their intolerance. I'm Todd Starnes.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
A day after delivering the paperwork on the Trump administration's new blueprint, Budget Director Mick Mulvaney led the charge in defending it. Mulvaney blasted Washingtonese when it comes to these money matters.
In Washington, D.C., if we spent $100 on a program last year and $100 on a program this year, back home we would call that a freeze. In Washington, we call that a cut. If we spent $100 on a program last year and $104 on a program this year, back home we would call that an increase. In Washington, D.C., we call that a cut.
In fact, the Trump budget proposal for this year, 2017, was $4.062 trillion. The president and his team are calling for a spending increase of $32 billion for fiscal year 2018 to $4.094 trillion. And yet Mulvaney has taken some heat.
Will the president's budget mean that Medicaid gets $1.3 trillion less than it would otherwise?
Then the CBO baseline score, the answer is yes. It will spend more money every single year over the previous year, with the exception I've mentioned.
Democrats are vowing to protect some of their priorities like Medicaid and food stamps.
We're going to fight this budget. I don't think we're going to have to fight it too hard because I don't think it's going to go anywhere.
When challenged, Mulvaney pushed back, noting the growth in government spending is not sustainable.
What about the standard of living for my grandchildren who aren't here yet, who will end up inheriting $30 trillion in debt, $50 trillion in debt, $100 trillion in debt? What about their standard? Who's going to pay the bill, Congressman? That's what this is all about.
Yeah, that's just part of the report, but that's enough. And then that is true. I mean, who is going to pay the bill? We are leaving our children, our grandchildren, the biggest mess you can imagine. And the histrionics are amazing. The Trump budget is called the New Foundation for American Greatness. And let me give you an idea of what it does. It repeals and replaces Obamacare. It reforms Medicaid. It implements welfare reform. It redirects foreign aid spending. It cuts all kinds of things. And it balances the budget in 10 years. It reforms immigration policy. And I could go on and on. And so, yes, it's a lean budget. It's the kind of budget we have to have in order to bring our financial house in order. So, of course, this is always met with histrionics. You know, the Republicans are trying to kill people. Remember Paul Ryan pushing this fake Paul Ryan pushing a little old lady over the cliff in her wheelchair? I mean, it's ridiculous, the things that Democrats say in response to this. But I also have to tell you that Republican establishment's not paying any attention either. They said it's dead on arrival because, you know, they like to spend money too. I guess they don't have grandchildren. But I want you to hear what this black pastor had to say in response to a Democratic black pastor in Philadelphia. He's a bishop. Let's listen to what he has to say.
This budget, if I can be honest with you, it is an attempt to implement ethnic cleansing in this nation from people of color, but also poor white folk from whom the services being cut will be impacted the most. President Trump and his surrogates have used dog whistle language to speak about race in negative ways and create fear in the hearts of Americans. Here is the reality. Many poor black families and brown families and Asian families and indigenous families will be devastated by this budget. The reality is that there are many poor white families that will be devastated by this budget as well. In an attempt to hurt families of color, the president is hurting white folks as well. These cuts will take away jobs in needed industries like healthcare, put people out of work, and increase poverty in this nation. We will see an increase in the early death and suffering as a result of lack of healthcare access through Medicaid. Seniors starving from lack of access to programs like Meals on Wheels. An increase in infant mortality from the lack of proper prenatal care and reproductive care for women. At the root of all this is an immoral desire to continue the transfer of wealth from the poorest in this nation to a handful of the richest. Mr. Trump, this is sin in any form.
All right. So that's the you hear it. It's the bishop. He's from the Philadelphia Living Water United Church of Christ. Who's creating fear? Seniors are going to die. They're going to starve. Infant mortality is going to go up. There'll be early death. It's ethnic cleansing. I mean, really. I'm just wondering, does the bishop have a budget, a family budget? Does he have a salary? And when he understands when he sits down at the table that he can only pay this much in rent, this much for groceries, this much for whatever he wants to buy or needs to provide for his family. And you have to have, you know, the same amount of income that you have that you spend, at least as much. You cannot run your family budget by ending each month in thousands and thousands of dollars in debt and do it every month and think it's going to last forever. It just won't. And, you know, there are, there's a lot of misinformation here, like on the Affordable Health Care Act, which I'm not, you know, how I feel about that. No need to go into all of that. But the CBO is now saying that I think some 28 million people will not be insured. Well, you know, they're going to remove the mandate so that you don't have to buy insurance. So naturally, more people will be insured because they're not going to choose. They're not going to be forced to buy it. And a lot of young people, I don't know how many, but they're not going to buy health insurance if they don't have to. So that's another false alarm. And now we know that the person, in terms of the CBO scoring for the health care, was written by someone on the Hillary Care Task Force. In other words, a person who worked with Hillary Clinton back in the 90s when she was trying to pass She was the first lady at the time and was somehow like running, trying to run the country on health care, and it really backfired on her. But whoever it was that was working with her is the person that scored the House's plan to replace Obamacare. So just so you know that. Well, but then more crazy things are happening. Do you recall I told you a couple of months ago that one of the strategies the left has for defeating conservatives in House seats, and I'd say the establishment Republicans use this same method. So, you know, it works, so they use it. They go back to a person's district, and they will plant a story in a hometown newspaper that's devastating, and then the candidate reels. It could be true, but it also could be not true at all. And it could be partially true. One never knows. But they print the worst kinds of claims, or they report the worst kind of thing. And it's usually at the last minute, and then the candidate is just reeling from that and then trying to recover. And then the public sentiment goes, most conservatives go, oh, I can't vote for a man that did that or does that. Because, you know, you take the press at their word. You take the reporting at their word. And then the conservative, it's usually always a conservative, loses the race. And the left or the establishment walks in and takes over. Well, we have a race in Montana today, and I want you to hear Griff Jenkins kind of describe what's happened in the last 24 hours. Here it is.
Republican Greg Gianforte was hoping to enter today's special election for Montana's sole congressional seat, vacated by now Interior Secretary Ryan Zinke, with an eye on victory over his Democratic challenger. But after an incident with a reporter from the Guardian newspaper last night, Gianforte is now facing misdemeanor assault charges in a re-energized Democratic Party just hours before the polls open. The incident was caught on tape and witnessed by our own colleagues, Alicia Acuna, and her team waiting to interview Gianforte. Take a listen to this tape.
We'll talk to you about that later.
Yeah, but there's not going to be time. I'm just curious if you have to
speak
right
with
now.
Shane, please.
But you don't.
I'm sick and tired of you guys. The last time you came in here, you did the same thing.
Alicia says that Gianforte did indeed grab reporter Ben Jacobs by the neck. Jacobs, after the incident, tweeting that he was body slammed and his glasses broken. Gianforte's campaign, though, is defending the incident in a statement saying, quote, after asking Jacobs to lower the recorder, Jacobs declined. Greg then attempted to grab the phone that was pushed in his face. Jacobs grabbed Greg's wrist and spun away from Greg, pushing them both to the ground. It's unfortunate that this aggressive behavior from a liberal journalists created this scene at our campaign volunteer barbecue. The Democratic Congressional Committee, not wasting an opportunity here, jumping on it, releasing Facebook ads calling on Gianforte to drop out of the race now, and on the Republican Party to denounce Gianforte. Already, three of Montana's major newspapers are withdrawing their endorsement of Gianforte. And just something to watch, Robin Heather, is the absentee vote today as it comes in. About a third of the vote has already been returned, and they have no-fault voting. So those votes will count.
Okay, so here's the larger picture. Of course, the Democrats want to take back the House, and so they're fighting hard in every single, these are special elections, and they're doing what they can to do whatever they're doing. And I don't know what part the establishment has played in this. I have no idea. And I'm not saying that Greg Gianforte, how would I know? There's no video of it. There's audio. So I don't exactly know what happened. But this much I do know, in reading the Guardian's report on this, Ben Jacobs was the reporter in question. He had previously now keep in mind that Greg Gianforte is endorsed by Donald Trump and Mike Pence. They've been running ads for him. So Gianforte, this reporter, Ben Jacobs, reported that Gianforte is involved with the Russians. So he's written an article about that. He also... I've got to find this other thing. He's been writing really bad things about Gianforte. So has the Daily, the Guardian. And the altercation took place at Gianforte's campaign headquarters in Bozeman, Montana. And as I understand it, Levinson told the Guardian by phone that before the incident, she overheard Gianforte's staff telling Jacobs that the campaign was upset with the Guardian's previous reporting and that the candidate would likely not have time to talk to him. Jacobs then entered the side room to try to talk to Gianforte. And I guess Gianforte was set up, this much I do know, set up to do some other interview and getting ready to do it when Ben Jacobs came in and put a microphone and a camera in front of his face with his phone. And that's, it seems, is why Gianforte was so angry. Not that his anger should have manifested the way it did, but he was very angry because Ben Jacobs didn't have permission to come in and because he had reported some really negative things about Gianforte. So we actually have the longer clip of this, and I want you to hear it. It's and you see what you think. This is clip 11. This is the all we have is just the audio. Let's listen.
We'll talk to you about that later.
Yeah, but there's not going to be time. I'm just curious if you have
to
act
speak
right
with
now.
Shane, please.
But you don't.
I'm sick and tired of you guys. The last Jesus time I came in here, you did the same thing. Get the hell out of here.
Jesus.
Get the hell out of here. The last guy did the same thing. You were the guardian?
Yes, and you just broke my glasses.
You, the last guy did the same thing.
You just body slammed me and broke my glasses.
Get the out of here.
You'd like me to get the out of here? I'd also like to call the police. Can I get you guys' names?
Hey, you gotta leave.
He just body slammed me.
You gotta leave.
All right, I just have a couple of just, I realize this is politically incorrect, but I don't know what happened. But it does, I did. My observation, Ben Jacobs doesn't sound like someone who's really been body slammed, does he? He sounds pretty calm. He's more concerned about, you know, reporting it. You just broke my glasses. Well, did he? I don't know. Did he break his glasses? Did the glasses break in the fall? But now it's going like wildfire. We have three newspapers withdrawing their support. Gianforte was expected to win that seat. His opponent is a Bernie Sanders supporter. He's a guitar. He sings folk music. He's a cowboy poet. And, of course, he's Bernie Sanders. What else can I say? So that's happening. It's happened in the last 24 hours. I'd say, you know, maybe mission accomplished. I'm sure Ben Jacobs is probably delighted about what he caused to happen. And you wonder, I mean, you know, how do you handle that? If the press is so aggressive with you and rude, which they are, do you have no rights at all to fight back? I don't know. Maybe you shouldn't be knocking them over if he did that. But what else are you to do? And, you know, I was watching last night. I was watching a Clark Gable, Spencer Tracy movie, because I told you sometimes I watch old movies just to cleanse my brain. I was in so many meetings yesterday, and they were good friends, and yet they fought. It was the Wild West, and they would get in fights with each other because they'd get angry. And I'm thinking, you know, I remember when men used to actually settle things between themselves, not killing each other, but, you know, just settling. And so, but now in this culture, you, that's whatever. If you respond in any way with any kind of anger, that's a terrible thing. So you know what I should do is open the phone lines about this. It's 888-589-8840, 888-589-8840. You are welcome to straighten me out on this one. I can't defend Gianforte, but I probably wouldn't vote against him just on this. If my alternative was a cowboy poet who loved Bernie Sanders and his policies. But they're hoping that he will, and they're, of course, claiming that this is going to be a big embarrassment for Donald Trump, and that's what they're working toward. So the phone number, again, is 888-589-8840. One other quick thing. Debbie Wasserman Schultz, you remember that these IT staffers on Capitol Hill, brothers and a wife, took $4 million since 2010 from the Treasury. And they got paid that for IT services. And they were working for Debbie Wasserman Schultz, and she was very, very cozy with them. Well, she was at a hearing yesterday of the funding for the U.S. Capitol Police, and she threatened the police chief. Let's listen.
If the member loses the equipment, says they lose the equipment,
yes, ma'am,
and it is found by the Capitol Police, it is supposed to be returned.
If ownership has been established,
right,
it'll be returned. If it's subject to an ongoing investigation, there are additional things,
okay,
that need to be turned
but
over.
Not an ongoing investigation related to the member. If the equipment belongs to the member, it has been lost, they say it's been lost, and it's been identified as that member's, then the Capitol Police is supposed to return it. Correct?
Well, it's not I can't give a yes or no answer on that because I know
it's a simple yes or no answer.
Well,
If a member loses the equipment,
yes, ma'am,
and it is found by the Capitol Police or your staff, and it is identified as that member's equipment, and the member is not associated with any case, and that is their equipment, it is supposed to be returned.
Okay, I'm
yes
going to interrupt
no?
this clip. Now, I wish we could hear it to the end because she ends up threatening him. There will be consequences. And here's the thing, that laptop was in like a crevice somewhere that the police found. And people are asking, in fact, insiders are asking, why is she protecting the Awan brothers? because there's been no investigation. They had access to literally all of the House and their email. Some have speculated they could be the source of many, many leaks. Why were they paid $4 million? And why are members of the House so quiet about this? Some are suggesting there might have been blackmail. I don't know. But this is yet another scandal brewing in Washington. This is Sandy Rios. We're going to go to the phones. 888-589-8840. 888-589-8840.
Peter said to Jesus, "Lord, what about this man?" My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Corner. At the climax of the account, when Jesus restored Peter's personal relationship with him and Peter's call to ministry, he saw John following them. Jesus had just predicted that Peter would give his life for the gospel when Peter said, "What about John, Lord?" Jesus responded, "What does he have to do with your calling? You follow me." With those words, Jesus hit a consistent flaw of the human condition. We derive value and self-worth by comparing ourselves to other people. Your ups, your downs, your failures, your victories were never meant to be compared to other people. We have been called to serve an audience of one. The only approval you need is His.
Visit the Hamilton Corner on the podcast page at AFR.net. For more from Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association. Washington Watch advances a culture where human life is valued and religious liberty thrives.
Hello, this is Tony Perkins, host of Washington Watch, right here on the American Family Radio Network, inviting you to join us each weekend for the weekend edition of Washington Watch for the latest from our nation's capital on what is happening as it pertains to faith, family, and freedom. You'll hear from policymakers, congressional leaders, and others each day, 4 p.m. Central Time. Be there.
Join Frank Turek, Richard Land, Norman Geisler, Greg Kokel, and others for Southern Evangelical Seminary's National Conference on Christian Apologetics. It's October 13th and 14th in Charlotte, North Carolina. Enjoy informative talks, a live debate, and a dialogue with Ken Ham from Answers in Genesis. Plus, there's the premiere of the American Family Association documentary, The God Who Speaks. Early bird pricing ends August 1st. Visit ses.edu for details.
8 Days of Hope 13 is headed to Lafayette, Louisiana, June 4th to June 11th. Hi, I'm Steve Tiber with 8 Days of Hope. 8 Days of Hope is a faith-based ministry. We've gone all over the country to help families rebuild after natural disasters. We've helped almost 1,800 families rebuild their homes, sometimes from the ground up. Lafayette, Louisiana, and the whole state of Louisiana got hit by epic flooding last year in August. Almost 25 inches of rain fell, and almost $20 billion of damage was done. Literally 140,000 homes flooded. Think about that, 140,000 families waiting for somebody to be a glimpse of Jesus. You can be a skilled professional, or you can be somebody like me who's less skilled but wants to give back. Go to 8daysofhope.com. We provide the food and lodging, and you can learn a lot more about the ministry. And we can't wait to see you in Lafayette, Louisiana, June 4th to June 11th. For more information, go to 8daysofhope.com.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Donald Trump has said the North Atlantic Treaty Alliance is obsolete and that it isn't. His visit to NATO headquarters today should establish which is right. That will not be determined simply by whether our allies agree to deliver on promises to increase defense spending and join in defeating the Islamic State. Important as these topics are, the future of the alliance actually depends on its reckoning with a largely unacknowledged elephant in the room. The attack in Manchester underscores that Europe is under assault from jihadist enemies within. Large numbers of them have been sent there by Islamist Turkey, a NATO ally, increasingly in name only. If that Trojan horse is allowed to remain and do damage inside the alliance, NATO will inevitably become worse than obsolete. It will be a vehicle for intensifying the Sharia supremacists' takedown of the free world. This is Frank Affney.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the Morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Sandy Rios back with you. I told you there's kind of a concerted effort by the left to take back, well, you can't blame them, to take back the seats in Congress. And I told you about the methods that they're using. I won't go into that again. But there are several fronts in this war. Media Matters, by the way, monitors this show, and they're part of an effort to destroy conservative news personalities. They've managed to get Glenn Beck off the air. They have gone after Rush Limbaugh, as you know. They did actually pretty good dent in his advertising budget. I think he's built it back, but they go after the advertisers. They have a very sophisticated method, and at some point I'll tell you more about that. Now they're going after Sean Hannity. So one of his sponsors has left. That's Cars.com out of Chicago. What they do is they have groups and brigades of people who contact these sponsors, and they have sort of scripted things that they say, and they scare the corporations because the corporations don't realize that this really is more than anything bluster. They don't necessarily represent millions of people, but they make it seem as though they do. So they're coming after Sean Hannity, and that relates, you know, of course, in some on some level to his discussion of Seth Rich, the Democratic computer tech who was murdered on the streets of Washington that I've been discussing. Fox, of course, retracted their story about him yesterday, and I told you that I don't think Fox is trustworthy on this because I think there's good reason to be concerned and to think that there might be a link between Seth Rich and WikiLeaks. I'm going to talk about that at great length tomorrow, so I hope that you'll want to tune in and listen to that conversation I'm going to have with Diana West, who's done a timeline on the Seth Rich murder. And so I hope you'll stay tuned. All right, I want to go back to the phones. I want to go to the phones. 888-589-8840 is the number. 888-589-8840. Let's go to John in Indiana. Good morning, John.
Good morning, Sandy. When I heard you speaking about this last-minute ambush by the press on Gianforte, it reminded me of Senator George Allen in the state of Virginia, where all he had to do was make a comment that they could seize upon about the photographer that had been stalking him for pretty much the whole campaign to not unseat him in a close election.
Was that the comment that he made about
the description of the person's appearance like a certain kind of oriental animal, a macaca or something,
yeah,
and that
right,
was taken
right,
to be
right.
racist.
Yeah, no, that's true. You're absolutely right about that. And we know that the press, it's not new that they are hostile to conservatives. I have to say very clearly, I wasn't there. So I don't know what Gianforte did. But just reading between the lines, you know, you're a guy. John, when you listened to that clip, did it sound to you like this Ben Jacobs was terribly hurt based on what he said after
the... It sounded like he saw the video of the doctor that was removed from the friendly skies of United and decided, hey, I'm going to get in on this.
I just wonder. I mean, it certainly is pretty convenient, isn't it? All right, John, I appreciate it.
I think so. Yes, ma'am.
Yeah, okay, thanks for your comments. Let's go to Bruce in Oklahoma. Good morning, Bruce.
Good morning. How are you doing today?
I'm good. I'm very good.
Excellent.
So what do you think about this Montana Republican who got mad at the reporter, and now the papers are withdrawing their support, and the election is today. It's today.
That's about what it seems to be going with the conservative. It's okay for the conservatives to get out and swing, have attack, shut down campuses all across the nation due to, you know, putting their message out, but for a guy to go in and invade somebody's privacy and invade unwelcome, it's just another tactic in their method. And then the other comment I have on the whole thing is, since when does tough, burly cowboys get onto the snowflake bandwagon? That's one old boy that ain't ever seen a saddle sore in his life.
You mean this poet cowboy who's a Bernie Sanders supporter? Have you seen him?
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't
I
know anything.
I've seen a picture of him, so I just find it interesting that, you know, how you know, somebody from the Western mentality in the cowboy world, it can look back and then see how socialism has a place in our society. It just doesn't fit.
No, so you wonder if he's a cowboy. Hey, Bruce, just a question for a guy.
Uh-huh.
I don't even know how to ask this, except I described, you know, watching that old movie with Clark Gable and Spencer Tracy and how many fights there were between the guys, and they honor, like, they settled their differences. I'm not saying we should be the Wild West, but it has something been lost in us becoming maybe over the line in terms of every touch, every glance, every attempt at sort of settling a circumstance is like punishable by law.
I totally think something's been lost. You know, there was a time in even during my life where, you know, if you got your butt kicked, you kind of put your head down. You didn't go bragging to the world that, hey, so-and-so kicked my butt. You know, it wasn't a standard of oh, I'm going to get something and get something back from these people because they did. You know, if you go pick a fight, you got your, you know, you got sent to the corner and you lost your fight, then, hey, you know, you got to take your pride with you. But it's like there's absolutely, there's no moral pride about things now. It's just like now, oh, hey, you know, somebody kicked my rear, I'm gonna get something back out of them. And, you know, I'll depend on those liberal courts or the liberal papers to justify my thing, so.
You know, it all sounds very, very grade school playgroundy, doesn't it? Like the kids that go, he hit me. That's what he sounded like to me. I'm sorry. I'm tough on him. I am, because he's already printed so many bad things about this Gianforte, and I imagine Gianforte was pretty angry to begin with, especially when
exactly.
He came in. So I realize I'm presenting it with the facts that I know. Maybe we'll hear more today, and I'll go, oh, Gianforte is a terrible person. I'm glad he didn't win, but I don't think so. We'll see. Bruce, thank
Maybe
you.
So, you know, but I agree with you. I don't agree either. And there's a point where, you know, that the media has to respect the privacy, even though it's a political candidate. And you know, I've always heard political candidates give up so many rights to run for that office and stuff. But you know what? They still have a pride side to them, and they still have, you know, what's right in their heart that they have to stand up for. And you know, maybe he should have held his tongue a little bit, but at the same time, you know, maybe it should be a call out to some of the rest of the world to just quit allowing the liberal media to represent them. And I agree that Trump should just, you know, ban the reporters who are constantly bashing him. You know, when you have such high numbers of negative reporting on the media side of the world, that it's time to just say, hey, you know, media, you don't really have that much of a place anymore.
Yeah. Well, interesting. Bruce, thanks a lot. I appreciate your comments. We should stop and listen to that 38-second clip again, Jeff. Let's listen to the audio of this altercation between Gianforte and Ben Jacobs, the writer for the Daily Mail.
We'll talk to you about that later.
Yeah, but there's not going to be time. I'm just curious if you have the
action. Speak
right
with
now.
Shane, please.
But you don't.
Sick and tired of you guys. The last time you came in here, you did the same thing. Get the hell out of here. Get the hell out of here. The last guy did the same thing. You were the guardian?
Yes, and you just broke my glasses.
The last guy did the same thing.
You just body slammed me and broke my glasses.
Get the hell out of here.
You'd like me to get the hell out of here? I'd also like to call the police. Can I get you guys' names?
Hey, you gotta leave.
He just body slammed me.
You gotta leave.
Okay, he just body slammed me. He broke my glasses. And that, by the way, was not the Daily Mail. The Daily Mail is actually a pretty good source. I use them a lot. That was the Guardian, which is much more to the left. Okay, I want to know what you think, so here we go. Let's go to Terry in Texas. Good morning, Terry.
Good morning, Sandy. How are you?
I'm good. So what do you think?
Yes, it's a beautiful day. Well, I just think that was the greatest thing he could have done, because if down here in Texas, that's what you do. You just, they usually go fight it out. And, you know, at least whether they won or you won, that you learn to respect the other person. You know that you're going to step over a line. I feel like that the man that's running for that office should be considered a public official. And if you were to stick a microphone or whatever else in somebody else's face like that, like a policeman, He has all the right to defend himself. And that's what I feel. I would vote for him if he was down here. So,
yeah.
And
you know, Terry,
I have one thing to say.
Okay,
one
go
thing
ahead.
About the pastor. The pastor.
Yeah.
He's talking about it being callous, money being cut. The yes. money that's being, it's not being cut from people. It's being cut from the people that don't deserve it, that are illegally here, that are not registered. They're just going from Medicaid to Medicare to all the social programs and making a living off of it. And they're just auditing it, and we'll make up the difference by not paying the people that don't deserve the money.
Well, interesting point, Terry. Thanks, and I wish I had more time to respond to that, but interesting comment. Let's go to William in Georgia. Good morning, William.
Good morning, Sandy. God bless you.
Thank you.
I just a couple of quick things real quick. First of all, I want to encourage you and every listener that despite of all the political pushback that we've been dealing with the radical left, it may seem like it's a one-sided victory, but realistically, it's only confirmation that we are winning on our side because, you know, what happens a lot, we have to expect the fact that there's going to be some backlash coming from the enemy when, you know, the prayers of the righteous are availing. And even in the midst of all that President Trump has been going through, and even in the midst of what happened with the senator who's actually running for office, you know, in the midst of what's going on, this is just obviously, it should fortify our belief that, you know, that what they stand for is for the good anyway. I'm not endorsing this behavior when I say that, but I do say in the same situation, people have a line, and if you push that line, something may happen, you know, to cause them to snap out of that. You know, his patience may have been short. And so, we it doesn't change my mind about him whatsoever, about him as a person, because realistically, none of us do perfect things anyway.
You know, I just was having a memory. I've forgotten all about this, and I can't give too many details, but let me just say, when I was younger, and actually in college, I was going through, like, we were being hazed. They don't do that anymore, but it was pretty rough. And there was a person who was hazing me who was really pushing and pushing and pushing and literally started, like, pushing me on the shoulder. And it had been days of accumulation. And I just snapped. I just absolutely snapped, grabbed the hand and said, "Don't you touch me." I mean, I just lost it because they had been pushing me. And I hadn't done anything. I hadn't responded because I wasn't supposed to. But I remember the anger, and I don't know exactly how are you to respond if someone is, there is a natural anger that comes when someone invades your space and abuses really their ability to do what it is that they're doing. They've gone across a line, and it seems to me like this may have been what happened with Gianforte and this Ben Jacobs, but William, what do you think about men fighting? Do you think that we've lost some ability to settle things on our own by having this kind of girly man response and this litigation and calling the police instead of just settling it?
Yeah, I think over the years, it's actually really demoralized itself over time. You know, there used to be a time like, you know, when I got into fights in school, you know, if I found out whether I win or lost at the end of the day, you know, the next day we shook hands and we forgot about the situation. But in the days that we see now, people are so quick to pull up a gun, you know, to shoot somebody because they may have lost something, because they may have been a sore loser. But, you know, at the end of the day, I wish it was the way it used to be when we used to settle things, the way it was, whether you win or lost, there still was a mutual respect for one another. But we lost that over the years.
Yeah, well, I guess we need to figure out how to get that back, William. Thanks so much. And, when you think about, I was just thinking, now, what would God say about this? And I think he would say, iron sharpens iron. And that's, of course, a proverb. But I think it might apply to this, too. We make each other better people. When we say to each other, don't do that, don't do that. You're over the line. We correct each other. There is no correction now. Anybody can do anything and get away with it and then whine if somebody pushes back. And that's why we've lost our civility. I do think we can help each other by correcting, by saying, that's not appropriate. Don't do that. But call me crazy. And Media Matters, you can write that up. All right. I have to take a break, kind of a 24-hour break. But thank you so much for all of your comments. Tomorrow we're going to be talking about Seth Rich. I think you'll find it fascinating. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast do not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.